Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Roggio. I'm a senior fellow at Foundation for Defense of Democracies and editor of FDD's Lone War Journal. This is Generation Jihad, the podcast that covers all things in what used to be known as the global war on terror, but we now call the Long War.
Welcome to a special edition of Generation Jihad, everybody. I'm your favorite part-time Friday co-host, Behnam Bentaleblu, coming to you earlier in the week. We have a big update to go over. For the first time ever, the Islamic Republic of Iran launched ballistic missiles from its own territory in conjunction with cruise missiles and drones at Israel. Today, we'll be covering that with the one and only Joe Truesman, our great friend and master and founder. Bill Roggio is out for part of this week, so he'll be dealing with us. Joe, greetings to you. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, Ben, I'm happy to be here.
So yeah, first reaction, just going straight into this. Did you think the Iranians would respond this way? I know we had about a week and a half of hype, a week and a half of buildup to this event, so much so that it created the space, particularly amid people in the Iran Watcher community, to say that such a strike would be exceptionally out of the ordinary for the Iranians. What did you think?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we talked a lot about it offline, Benno, you and I, and I didn't think they would do something like this. I really didn't. Something this, you know, large scale. I figured they would just maybe go after an Israeli target in a, you know, in a third country, right? Or maybe in a consulate embassy, but not like this. So there, but there, you know, Iran has so many options, right? It has its proxies. Of course, it has its own arsenal. It can and has used and did use against Israel. But it was difficult. There was just so many options. But I didn't think it would be something like this. But you know, right before, like the day before and the day of the attack, it was if you were really paying attention, especially with the news. You knew something was going on, right? That it was coming. It was coming. And then it happened, right? And you started seeing all this flurry of activity, all the videos on social media. But yeah, I was very surprised that they did it. But they went ahead, and now we're waiting for Israel's response.
Yeah, it really was a different threat environment, so much so that I don't think we were wrong to talk about strategic patience. You know, when you look at the way Iran has launched missiles from its own territory against other targets, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, take this down. This is akin to someone not knowing how to ski to the first time they ski, sending them off on a double black diamond slope. And the reason I'm saying that is because up until now, every single public ballistic missile operation from Iranian territory, whether that was in Iraq or Syria or Pakistan, since 2017 to present, against the Kurds, against us, against ISIS, against Baluch alleged separatist groups, was against an undefended target. To go from striking undefended targets about 500 to 200 to 500 to 700 to only one time 1,300 kilometers away from you, to striking the Mecca of the definition of the most layered air and missile defense system in the world, and then telegraph that strike to have other countries with robust air and missile defense capabilities come to its aid in advance, really seemed to either be the height of folly or the height of hubris, or perhaps they had something else in mind. Joe, do you buy any of these theories? There's a Jerusalem Post story I think I saw citing some other source that said the Iranians had warned the Turks and the Turks played some intermediary role. But even if that story had not existed, given the drama that existed in January 2020 with the Iranian missile strikes on the bases in Iraq, some had said they missed. When you looked at the satellite imagery after, they clearly did not miss. This is not just Behnam Bentaleblu, FDD, saying this, author of Arsenal. This is, you know, even the likes of people who disagree with me on the color of the sky, like people at CNS, you know, Jeffrey Lewis had said the Iranians didn't miss. The Iranians even amplified Western press reporting that said that they did not miss. What is going on here?
Right. The way I see it is this. I think if Iran wanted to strike Israel in a way that was surprising, right, they could have. I mean, everyone knew that Iran was going to attack, right? Obviously not on the scale that they did, but if they wanted to, make this a surprising act, right? Like, I think they could have. There were indications already there that they were gonna hit Israel, right? And in hindsight, it's a lot easier now to say this, but there were some videos I think published in the last day or two, published on Iranian press, that showed ballistic missile launches and drone launches as well, and that there were already indications. A robust intelligence agency could have seen this coming a mile away, right? As far as this attack, not only did they really just telegraph this, there was a lot of leaks in the media. And I think they probably did. I think they probably wanted the United States to know and Israel to know what was going to happen. I can't say in how much detail, of course. Why would they do this? Maybe they wanted to make sure that they don't want a regional war to break out, right? So they were telegraphing their intentions. That's one possibility. But I'm curious, Benham, because you kind of touched on this. I'm wondering, because I'm sure you've seen the reports, that a lot of these missiles, ballistic missiles, and maybe drones as well, I'm not sure about the drone part, failed to reach, they failed either because they were shot down, right? Or a lot of these ballistic missiles just failed and crashed into Jordan or even in Iran, for example. What do you think? How do you think Iran performed here as far as the ballistic missiles?
Well, I think there are several layers of performance, but just before we get to this, because I feel like I'm going to get up on a soapbox, I just want to acknowledge for the audience one thing. I was going to ask you this question. You answered it anyway. If you were Khamenei's advisor, quote unquote, role playing, what would you do? And you had mentioned striking a consulate in the region, right? And I think you and I offline had been discussing this. And I just wanted to share this funny anecdote with everyone first. About a few days before the strike, I think it was on Thursday, I was on this TV channel, Iran International. It has headquarters in the UK and in DC as well. And they asked me, they said, if you'd Khamenei advisor, what would you do? I said, well, first of all, I would resign. And then they said, what would you do actually? I said, second of all, it's not wise on a diaspora TV station to have FDD be giving the world's foremost state sponsor of terrorism targeting advice. But even then, the guy pushed me. I said, listen, in that case, past this prologue, some kind of retaliatory operation against what we had seen in the past, which was in the past, Iran had responded against embassies. It even sadly responded against Jewish targets. We know 92 and 94 is both the Israeli embassy and the Jewish Cultural Center in Argentina. That's in fact timely right now because the Argentine judiciary is pressing the Islamic Republic on this. But if I had to actually pick an ideal target, and I just wanted to put this out there in terms of what I think a more calculated approach, maybe, because some will say, well, Iran overtly fired these missiles, but telegraphed it, perhaps had a back channel with the Americans. There's that Turkish story. There's the capabilities argument afterwards. There's all of this stuff. But even if it didn't exist, I think a wiser target for the Iranians would have been a very controlled precision strike at the Israeli embassy in Amman. The reason being is that, Iran's main diplomatic achievement after October 7 is not just inflaming the Arab street against the Arab state, but using that inflammation to delay normalization, to raise the price of normalization, to put political distance between America and its most important partner in the region, Israel. And the Iranians are very good at using military tools to achieve political ends. What this strike showed is that the military tools on their own have considerable room for improvement. The problem is, once you say that, then you default into this weird position of you ignore all of the military improvements given the one, military misuse, and you take this as the measure of the entire threat, which it reminds me of that Einstein story. One day, allegedly, Einstein went into the classroom and wrote 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 2 = 3. And he did that all the way down until 1 + 9. And then he wrote = 11. And then everyone chuckled. And then they said, he said, this is all apocryphal, allegedly, by the way. And they said, why did you laugh at 1 + 9 = 11? And, the kid said, well, obviously you made a mistake, and it's such a simple mistake, and it's such a grotesque mistake. He said, yes, but you missed the trend line of all the correct things. And I do fear right now that this will lead to a significant downplaying of the drone and missile capabilities, whereas I think you can't compare them to America. You can't even compare it to Israel. Israel is a Middle Eastern country, Iran's a Middle Eastern country, but they have fundamentally different military industrial complexes, fundamentally different foreign and security policies. The Islamic Republic is moving more into the world of political utility. These weapons are not just tools of terror, they're tools of deterrence, punishment, and coercion. It has been an open question in the dozen or so missile attacks from 2017 to present, publicly from Iranian territory, as to how much of a succinct military tool the regime could have, particularly with respect to ballistic missiles. We put the cruise and the drone on the table to discuss later. I think this considerably set them back. And the reason I mention a strike in Jordan is you could obviously press on, you know, state-society tensions there, the large Palestinian population, the refugee issue, the fact that outside the Israeli embassy in Amman, there have been significant protests since October 7, the fact that since 2020, we have a bunch of smuggling stories, arms, Iranian arms going through, allegedly Jordan to the West Bank, that in more instability allows you to have, you know, a greater pressure vector on Israel via the West Bank, via Jordan. It would have come with all of these things that Iranians could control, right? If the Iranians are masters of chaos, if the Iranians can exploit your grievance to further their strategic end, if you can only build when there is stability and they can only build when there is chaos, this would have been the right kind of controlled chaos. And for a country that hadn't even practiced firing ballistic missiles against a defended target, to go up against the best defended target, there had to be an undistributed middle. There had to be a signaling reason. Now, I don't think that the strike was performative, like some folks in Washington have said, though I do think it was intended to signal resolve against Israel and signal resolve internally. Signal resolve to the Iranian population in the sense that don't think that we're weak and we're just taking it from a foreign adversary, but this is not domestic pressure from the Iranian population, because sometimes people say, oh, the regime has domestic pressure to respond. Well, the Iranian people have been chanting since 2009, not Gaza, not Lebanon, my life for Iran, since 2018, forget Syria, think about us, since 2019-20, where did the oil money go? It was spent in Palestine, and even much more recently after October 7, some even more escalatory rhetoric from the Iranian population about the regime's foreign and security policy. The regime is not listening to the views, wants, and wishes of the population, but it is trying to achieve wins abroad to look tough in front of the population. And the public nature of the response and the taboo-breaking nature of the response aided the Iranian government in their political game here. So much so that I don't know if you guys saw the Israeli ambassador at the UN, when he brought his iPad or something into the UN Security Council chamber, he showed that video with sound, I think, of, you know, the Iranian projectiles being intercepted and kind of falling over, and the Dome of the Rock on the background, and that was the Temple Mount there. That actually is a PR win for the Iranians. They wanted to be seen, I think. This is all about being seen. And the degree to which they wanted to cause chaos and mayhem, I don't doubt for a second that they wanted to wash away blood with blood, just like they wanted to wash away blood with blood in the case of Soleimani. But with Israel, which does have a history of responding, versus the Americans, which does not have a history of responding, I think this is a strategic misstep by the Iranians, regardless of what happens now with Biden and Bibi and Gallant. You hear reports of this, Gallant initially wanting to respond directly, and then Bibi allegedly saying, let's wait to hear what the Americans say. Then allegedly that line from Biden about take the win for deterrence by denial rather than deterrence by punishment, that you intercepted so much, that we did so well together. And I think right now this is the perfect storm for the Israelis to raise the saliency of the military option against Iran. And the Iranians even went so far as to say they have this new doctrine, Joe, I'd love to know what you think about it, that, you know, they will respond more so against Israeli threats from Iranian territory. But to someone like me, who's contrasting their regional track record versus their Israel track record, that might be painting even more of a target on them. So I see this as a self-inflicted wound. I see this as people even missing the correlation of forces of the positive trend lines in the evolution of their missile and drone capabilities, and now seeing this. And now I can easily see Israel and potentially even a different U.S. administration taking stock of this flashpoint as to what Iran's capabilities are, and accordingly bringing in the military option more so into their policy toolkit to deal with Iran, whereas that was off the table for so long because of this fear of Iranian conventional deterrence. Am I reading too much into this?
No, definitely not. You know, it's something I read a lot over the weekend, is that, especially after the attack, is that all the support Israel received internationally, right? That they were attacked by Iran with all these ballistic missiles and drones. And there were some interesting ideas of, well, how should Israel respond? And, but the support that was there, I don't know, maybe Israel could use it to as leverage, right? For the Gaza war that's going. And maybe that's what, maybe the Iranians factored that in, that Israel was tied up with Hezbollah in Lebanon and in the war in Gaza, and that they could take advantage of this by firing all these rockets and these ballistic missiles and cruise missiles and drones. Maybe that factored into their decision to do it, right? But nevertheless, it's, you know, I keep thinking, and you sort of touched on it, but especially I wanted to know more than anything, okay, so Iran fires all these projectiles. What was their, did they actually have a target, right? You know, some Israeli reports say it was Nevatim Air Base in I think southern Israel. And there were a lot of alerts there during the attack. So it's possible, right? There's a large air base there, and it wouldn't surprise me, and I don't know this for a fact, but it wouldn't surprise me if Nevatim was the air base that the fighter jets, the Israeli fighter jets that took off from there, that attacked the Damascus, right? That killed the generals, the IRGC Quds Force generals. So maybe that's what the Iranians were actually aiming for. But nevertheless, I found this all very surprising still, this attack. I thought there would be more proxies involved. The IDF published this infographic showing where the missiles and drones were fired from. A lot of them obviously from Iran, but there were a lot from Yemen too, which is interesting. There were other reports.
I saw that graphic, by the way. I couldn't find any numbers. I saw a lot of lines. I don't know if that was like qualitatively... Like they just like imply that this stuff came from there, because if that is the case, we need to really disaggregate. There's two things we got to, sorry to interrupt, but I remember that graphic and I was banging my head against the wall. I was like, does one line represent like X missiles? Like,
yeah, it's,
what are we supposed to believe here? Because does this mean the majority of stuff came, like at least one fifth of the stuff came from Yemen? In which case then this cold water being poured on the Iranian long range strike capability should be transferred to the proxy, but that was something we knew already in October of last year, because the Houthis failed to even penetrate and only once hit Eilat, and you wrote that up for LWJ less than 3 weeks ago.
Right. It was that graph was missing a lot of crucial information, unfortunately. So, I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense, and it made it seem like Iran was firing from Yemen. So are you telling me there's, you know, the IRGC's in Yemen and they're firing at Israel as well, or are they or is this the Houthis firing? So it was really confusing, but nevertheless, at least Iran seems, Yemen were involved here in this attack. And again, there was some, and also interestingly, just to add that there were some Hezbollah rockets during that time, during the attack, or just a little bit after. In northern,
it's comparatively
Israel.
Small. No,
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what I said. It's not. It wasn't outside the scope of what we've seen in the last six and a half months, right? From Hezbollah, it wasn't anything like, whoa, this is different, right? So some can say, yeah, it was a part of the. Some make the argument that, yeah, it was a part of this attack. I don't really think so. It was just not enough information for me to say so, right? Now, if they would have attacked Haifa, for example, or some major Israeli city, okay, yes. So nevertheless, I think this attack shows that, okay, great, you know, we can see that Israel's missile defense, the layered missile defense system that it has, is absolutely remarkable. However, just imagine, we can just, you know, have to think through the future, right? Look, Iran can do this, right? Imagine if Hezbollah did the same thing, like if they coordinated this strike, right? A massive strike. Would Israel be able to defend itself as it did Saturday evening, Sunday morning? And that's very worrisome, right? To see that. So thankfully, Hezbollah didn't launch a massive attack. It could have, right?
Yeah.
And so nevertheless, So yeah, still a lot to think about there.
In that world, like I'm listening to you right now, I hear you weighting each column, you know, directly from Iran, directly from Hezbollah, what's old, what's new. I'm hearing you weight each and every one of these, but this is maybe I'm projecting here, but isn't the weightiest thing just the territory? Like, I feel like we're in all this analysis about the performance of these weapons, like that will come. We will address that. And for folks interested in that, there was a very interesting piece by General McKenzie in the Wall Street Journal, I think last night or this morning, a very sober approach. I would recommend that piece. Before we even get to this performance again, though, isn't just the fact that this territory was struck such a game changer? Like, that's the whole thing.
Right. It should be. Yeah.
And do you see this? I mean, I see this as an Iranian own goal. And this goes back to our conversations about strategic patience. But there were some in the past nefarious voices, nefarious in terms of the nature of the Iran-Israel-America debate, who said that Israel is not taking out targets, but is trying to bait and bleed the Iranians into a conflict that would ultimately bring in the Americans. Do you see any of that all here in a world where Iran was such a good shadow fighter, if you will, or gray zone fighter against Israel, but the consistent loss of its position by Israel, whether you look at the assassinations of the nuclear scientists in the past, the fact that during the pre-JCPOA period, the fact that there is still a mystery over who killed the father of Iran's missile program in 2011. Did he die of natural causes, as in, you know, we know there was an explosion on a missile he was working on. Was that engineered? Then the killing of Iran's chief nuclear scientist, Fakhrizadeh, inside Iran. Then, of course, the string of cyber attacks and sabotage of select Iranian nuclear facilities. Then even some of the attacks on the drone facilities. Israel hasn't taken credit for these, but a lot of these, you know, a finger has been pointed essentially at Israel. And even America has publicly come out saying it's not us. I highly think it's not MI6 or like Belgian intelligence.
Right.
And even Iran's former minister of intelligence, I think pre-COVID, has said that no Iranian official should sleep soundly. This has even led to a joke that I heard, a joke that's kind of being said in Iran now. There's a lot of things actually in the aftermath of the strike that said if the IRGC actually wanted to kill Israeli spies, they probably should have fired at the Supreme Leader's office. You know, there's so much to unpack here, but the richness of the strike is the territory, because now if you're Israel, if you know that your adversary has an asymmetric advantage and you have a conventional advantage and you've been able to erode his position but not destroy his position in the gray zone, and he finally overreacts and he comes into the open, now you kind of have him where you want him, don't you? Didn't Israel have a strategy to this regard? This is not the conspiratorial Israel's sinking them into a war and then America's going to have to come in and clean it up for Israel. This is did Israel have an attrition strategy that forced Iranians to escalate, where the Iranians thought they could do the Russian escalate to de-escalate thing, whereas the Israelis would catch them on the way down from de-escalation and say, aha, and forced Iran finally to have a fight on Israel's terms rather than on the Islamic Republic's terms? Do you think that was at all part of the calculus?
You know, it's certainly possible. It's funny you mentioned that there's some people, we'll call them, that have been saying that, you know, Israel wants to drag the United States into a war with Iran. I think over the weekend, actually, there was some reports from unnamed U.S. officials there was a worry that Israel was trying to essentially do that, right? And nevertheless, you know, before the strike against in Damascus, I think the Israelis thought this through, right? Because of not only the nature of the target or targets, but where they were hitting, right? Depends on who you believe, of course, what reports you believe, but this consulate or so-called consulate that was destroyed, Iranian consulate, you know, I think the Israelis, they thought this through and didn't, I don't think they thought, honestly, that Iran would retaliate the way they did, simply because of all, as you mentioned, you gave many examples of Israel's, this shadow war Israel has been engaged with Iran, but in a third country, in Syria, right? mostly in Syria, but you know, there's been others, of course, in Iran and then, of course, in the Red Sea and into other areas. But nevertheless, I don't think the Israelis thought that Iran would react this way, but I think that's what it changed, right? Something changed there. And again, I go back to what I said earlier, that maybe Iran thought Israel is still weak because it's involved in multiple arenas right now. So they figured that, yeah, they can react this way. It was time to react this way, right? I think you said it, Benham, that, or I read a quote somewhere, something along the lines that the Iranians would slap, that the word slap the Israelis. Maybe you told me. But nevertheless, now I'm just curious more than anything how the Israelis will respond, right? Again, it just, I'm thinking, you know, if Israel wasn't in a war right now, I'd be very concerned as far as what they would do, right? But
do you mean concerned as in scale of the response or concerned how so?
Yeah, scale of the response. I think the Israelis are very sensitive to Iranian actions against it, right? Or either through by Iran or through its proxies. But this was completely different, right? You know, the direct attack on Israeli soil by Iran. So, but it's tied up in a war right now, Israel is. So, and it's got international pressure on it. And of course, the U.S. administration telling them, you know, So,
but defensively, the president seemed to say, like, you know, his commitment to Israel was ironclad.
Right.
I wonder, I'm thinking out loud here, to what degree does that still empower Israel? You know, the debates between Bibi and Gallant and everybody else notwithstanding, to what degree does that still empower Israel to say, hey, what just happened is a watershed moment for the Middle East. The guys who fight in the shadows are now fighting out, and they have directly attacked my territory. After 6 months ago, their proxy directly attacked my territory. You rightly understood the need to defend against what their attack was going to be. Now I need to reset that deterrence. Because if I don't reset that deterrence, my position is going to become increasingly like your position. And maybe you, America, are big enough and whatever, strong enough to absorb 170 militia attacks in, you know, 6 months and only respond 11 to 20 times, depending on how you count. But we can't have that. We don't have that strategic depth. This is not a region we can flee from or return to, but this is our homeland. And the same would apply, by the way, in terms of the Iranians. You know, anytime there's a direct attack on Iran, they would respond publicly. No one has done that social science experiment with the Iranians, though, whereas we've seen multiple times that social science experiment with the Israelis. And by the way, one reason why this attack was so damning, the last time a state actor directly targeted Israel from its state was briefly in the Gulf War in 1991. Right. With the Scuds that Saddam Hussein was trying to send. And even then, Israel exercised restraint because of the pressure of the international community and George H.W. Bush in particular. Now one wonders, is Biden going to press for the same thing? Not because he has a coalition and not because Bibi has a war in Gaza on his hands, but because there's an election? I don't know how these dots connect.
Right. No, it's a very good point. At least in reference to just overall, Israel is in an open battle right now on multiple fronts, right? Gaza, Lebanon, at some point Syria. Obviously, they have Iraqi militias firing drones, and you know, and they claim to be firing at least it looks like cruise missiles as well at times at Israel. And now the Iranians, right? And a lot of this beforehand, before pre October 7th, and you got the stuff in the West Bank too. I would even mention. October 7th, you know, this was all being managed, right? A lot of this, at least the West Bank, and, you know, there would be some flare-ups in Gaza, but, and then a lot of stuff between Iran and Israel was just in Syria, right? But just post-October 7th, everything just went nuts, right? All the fronts, they all just lit up. And then Israel reacted. In Syria, against the IRGC, right? There was multiple strikes against IRGC assets there, and of course, which led to the attack in Damascus. But nevertheless, I think the American administration, they at least privately understands that Israel is going to has to retaliate. It cannot sit on the sideline, and has to at least restore or reset deterrence. And I know deterrence is that word is used so much, but I think they understand that what I think the administration is trying to do more than the U.S. administration is trying to do is, you know, just at least influence Israel, right, to keep it, keep any response to for it to be a small response, right, or nothing that will trigger obviously a regional war. But I don't know now. Now, honestly, maybe we are. But in then a regional now, war.
If that, I mean, we kind of have a regional war already. Like, yeah. You know, Iran's been orchestrating this multi-front thing against Israel, Their strike is consistent. There, regardless of your views on this. Regardless of your views on this, I would say Iran is still pushing the same strategy. Like, it may have a different doctrine of more overt launches, or allegedly it'll engage in more overt pressure against Israel. But the strategy is still the death by a thousand cuts strategy. If first they made you absorb rockets, then they make you absorb drones, then it's boom and bust cycle of Gaza-based terror. 2008, 2012, 2014, 2021, 2022 briefly, but it was PIJ, and then this. And then you layer on the West Bank thing. You know, this is the next thing to have to deal with. And not one of these strikes will be a deep cut, but together on society, on the state of Israel-America relations, on the state of Israel-world relations, it can have an effect. And in as much as there will be pressure on Israel to respond because of the targeting of Israeli soil, once the Israelis target Iranian soil, then that will be another historic first. Whereas much of the things that we spoke about were allegedly Israeli, were all kind of in the covert world. Once everybody feels comfortable having their wars in the overt world, then it's easier for them to reach for not the weapons of mass destruction, but the tools of mass destruction, right? If you were limited by the tools you could employ, if Iran had to do a proxy rather than its own forces, if it had to do a rocket versus a missile, now Israel is going to be moving from, okay, F-35s in Syria versus F-35s in Iran.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. But as you said, tools, right? So I mean, the Israelis don't necessarily have to do something overt, or maybe they feel like they're compelled to do something overt, like sending F-35s, right?
I think a covert response that continues over time is wise.
Yes.
But at the same time, I don't know how. The whole point is that this was public. Like, right. The Iranian win is not military. The Iranian win is political. And to look like Uncle Sam is putting the handcuffs on you means that the guy that calls Uncle Sam the Great Satan has read Uncle Sam correctly, right, and knows more about your relationship with Uncle Sam than you do. Like, what a world.
No. And then they've used this propaganda for years, right? You hear it from the Iranians, you hear it from Hezbollah you hear it both ways, really, but that the Americans, that Israel is controlled by the United States. But sometimes we hear that the United States is controlled by Israel, right? Well, that's a different story. But nonetheless, yes, I get your point. I think that Israel has the opportunity to do something here, but it doesn't necessarily have to be overt. I still think they could do something covertly, like the million examples that there are already on Iranian soil. But that would likely take time, right? Maybe something that Israel can't do right now. They need to do something quickly. And just because of public opinion and all sorts of other things. So maybe the only thing to do is an overt strike against a certain, a key military installation, let's say a drone installation, for example. I don't think the Israelis are going to go after civilian infrastructure. That's not going to happen here, I think.
They targeted a drone infrastructure.
Oh, they did. Yes.
In the past, before this happened. So
right.
Even the Iranians would say, like, unless there is something public, the Iranians would already feel acclimated to the Israeli response.
Mm. No, good point.
Because if escalation is defined as a different target, a different tool, and it's target, tool, and geography.
Right. Right.
And you're in the same geography, but at a different level of visibility, right? The Iranians will say, okay, well, the Israelis targeted our drone facility, probably using a spy or some other network because there was a quadcopter drone, which is, you know, you're doing that within 5 kilometer radius max.
Right.
So they're like, we're used to this. And the most dangerous thing here is not even the Iranian ballistic missiles landing in Israel. It is the thought in the minds of the Iranian decision maker that it is that that which has been normalized for part of the region, which is the kind of free fire mentality, can be normalized to all of the region.
Oh, yeah, that's dangerous. Absolutely.
That is really dangerous.
Right. And
that's why it's in America's interest to not let that crystallize.
Right.
And it seems to me that the forces who are telling me not to worry about that crystallization, their best argument is a combination of politics, which is to say, look how good deterrence worked. They will say, Iran gave us the tip off with the Turkey story. They telegraphed the strike, and then they said it was concluded. To which my response will be, telegraphing, understandable. But the rest of the stuff is kind of outweighed by the political success of the strike, not the military failure of the strike. Am I being too hawkish here?
No, absolutely. I can only imagine how nervous the Saudis, the Gulf states, Jordan, it was and maybe still is after watching what just happened, right? On Saturday night. So absolutely. I agree with you 100%. So I think it gives it more reason, right, for Israel to respond in at least a manner where it will hurt the regime, right? But I'm just not sure what that would be, of course, right? Something we haven't discussed. So that could probably be for another podcast. But
yeah, I mean the X factor on the targeting thing, we should save that for another podcast and continue the conversation. But maybe I'll just end with this. You know, what should folks look out for? You know, I would say if there is a strike and then we come back and discuss on the back end of that, what should folks make of it? You know, I would say, is this a decapitation strike? Is it against the regime leadership asset? Versus, is this a defanging strike, like to target the capabilities Iran had used to target Israel, to lessen that or destroy that or erode that? And then I would say more broadly, like if this is just a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities, which, you know, will open up a different can of worms, but if it's a strike on something like that, or a strike on energy facilities like refineries, oil storage stations, what have you, then that is deterrence by punishment. So let's, you know, let's think of these, you know, triple Ds as we try to make sense of what an Israeli strike might be. Do you think there would be a different vector or can everything that Israel might do in the overt world? Because again, I think even the Israelis understand the optics part here. Is there a different strike that might fall into a different category, or am I oversimplifying these three?
No. I think it's perfect. And again, you got to remember going back to, I think Israel is going to try to contain this too, right? I don't think it'll be anything like a decapitation strike. I think they will go. It's of course this goes back to what we were talking about before the strike by Iran on Israel. Okay, what are they going to do, right? There's so many. They have so many tools available. There's so many targets available, right? So we're unsure what exactly would hit, but there were options there. I think the Israelis do have options, right? Now they just got to figure out what it's going to be. They might try to do something tit for tat, right? Like I said earlier, I think the strikes, at least one of the main targets, or not the target of the Iranian attack, at least militarily, was the Air Force base in Nevatim in southern Israel. So wouldn't surprise me if the Israelis do something similar with an Iranian a military installation. So
yeah, there's at least three that come to mind. There's a IRGC ground forces base in Urumia. There's missile bases in Tabriz and then in Kermanshah. And then in the south in Khuzestan, I think some of these capabilities even came from central Iran, either Shiraz or a little bit further east.
Or the launch sites. Yeah, like it could be they could hit the launch sites. I mean, there's just so many options. So nevertheless, I think at least the Israelis will try to inflict at least some pain on the Iranian military. Right. So but we'll have to see. And then again, I'm sure we'll talk about it again when it happens.
Yeah. Well, until then, a tense time continues to get tenser. taboos continue to be broken and sacred cows continue to be slaughtered. Joe, thank you for your time. Thank you for your time, seriously. And until the next episode of Generation Jihad, everything that Bill says here, like, subscribe. If there's a 5-star option, to hell with it, give us a 6-star. We haven't slept at all this weekend. All the best, and until next time, take care.